Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. Today we are going to hear from both sides in the debate over the proposed Rosemont open pit copper mine in the Santa Rita Mountains. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show, Kathy Arnold is with us. She is Vice President of Environmental and Regulatory Affairs for Rosemont Copper. And Gail Hartman is here. She's head of the group Save the Scenic Santa Ritas. Joining me in questioning is Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Thank you all for being with us.
Thank you.
Kathy Arnold, let's begin with you. What's the most compelling argument that you put forth on why we need the Rosemont mine?
Well, right now, looking at government shutdowns and people out of work and all of the crises with financial issues going on, it's dollars, it's jobs, it's people being able to go to work every day, and it's the tax dollars we'll generate. So right now for us, that's a huge compelling reason. We've done tons of studies, and we've got lots of information out there for people to review and work through, and we've got a great process going on with all the various agencies. But today, if I were to look at it, it is the jobs.
Economic situation is what is the most compelling reason.
Economics.
Gail Hartman, what's the most compelling reason not to have the Rosemont mine go forward?
Well, there's so many, it kind of hardly know where to start.
Well, this is just to open our discussion.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I'll just give you what I think is kind of the overall picture here of how bad the mine would be. We often say that the copper will go to China, the profits will go to primarily foreign investors, about 80% are foreign, and we get left with a giant hole in the ground and a waste mountain 50 stories high and several miles across that will obliterate entire valleys in our public national forest. So for starters, that's some reasons why we think it's a bad idea.
But Gail, can your group at least throw a bone to Rosemont, because their revegetation, their reclamation efforts are really unprecedented in the mining industry? Yes, we do end up with a big hole in the ground, but they are really bending over backward to try to address some of the concerns. Would you agree with that?
No, I think I would not. I'm sure you have seen a memo that came out recently from Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry, who referred to their reclamation efforts as essentially meaningless. He pointed out that the waste piles would be so steep-sided that they can't be effectively revegetated. And even if the tops are ultimately to some degree revegetated, you've put a mesa where some beautiful valleys used to be that were very popular for recreational purposes, wildlife habitat will be gone. And so I don't think the reclamation, although it sounds good, I think it's very difficult to do, and my guess is it really is not going to accomplish much.
Kathy, you want to respond to that?
Well, that's the key is, as Gail said, a guess. And we've done a ton of work. We've got the U of A involved. We've spent about $550,000 with the U of A so far, working on revegetation processes. Dr. Jeff Femi at the Department of Natural Resources is heading up a group of students that have done a series of master's programs to figure out what will work, what won't work, how best to do the revegetation. Our slopes are not steep. They're 3-to-1 slopes, which is 18 degrees. That's what farm equipment can drive on, so therefore we know we can revegetate that, and that's pretty standard in the industry right now. We can go flatter, sure, but then you impact more land. So what we've done is pick the trade-off where we can get things to grow versus how much land we're going to use in order to cause this revegetation to happen and allow for successful reclamation. We've done a lot of work determining that we can do this. Now, every time I hear Gail speak, we speak about guesses. We don't think, we believe. And then we are compared to what's going on in Green Valley. And I don't want to vilify what goes on in Green Valley. That's 50-year-old technology. They're working to change things down there, and things are getting better. But it's a slow process when you're using facilities and you're actively operating them. Right now, we're able to plan for the future. We're able to decide how we want things to work. And we're able to implement them as we go.
Kathy, Rosemont CEO Rod Pace has said that this mine will help us reduce our dependency on foreign copper, yet he has also, after a time and after a lot of questioning, admitted, I'll use that word, that this is going to be sold on the open market or in foreign markets. How is the United States going to benefit?
Right now we import 34% of their 35% of the copper that we need. This project will produce 10% of the nation's production for copper, 5% about, or 8% of the demand for copper, which means that there's the opportunity here to keep it here. Unfortunately, we have had to shut down all the smelters in the United States, and so there aren't places that we can send it. We don't propose a smelter, but we are producing 20 million pounds of copper a year that does not have to be smelted, that will stay here in the country directly. Other copper, if it goes out for smelting, can come back to the refineries that are here, or else it comes back in products. And, I mean, would we like to be able to keep it here? Sure, it's cheaper to keep it here. And if there's an opportunity to do that, we probably will. But copper concentrates are a commodity that are sold on the open market. And so we're producing a product, copper, and that'll offset what needs to come in that's not produced here.
But this is one of the things that you are selling the public on, this whole idea of the mine on, is that we are going to meet the copper needs of the United States. And talk about guesswork. Now you're saying if we buy it and bring it back here, then we will. But there's no guarantee.
And I see where you're saying. But unfortunately, you've got to get it somewhere. So we're getting it here. The idea that we can rely on China to produce everything that goes into the items that we purchase and bring back and not cause those items to increase in cost is quite frankly, I think it's immoral. We look at third world countries and say you should produce the goods that we need for the kind of livelihood we want to have, and you should give us what we want and not kick anything into the world market. And quite frankly, air pollution doesn't stop at the border.
Let's bring Gail Hartman now back into this conversation. Mm-hmm. Gail Hartman, the president of the group Save the Scenic Santa Ritas, and Kathy Arnold has been speaking for Rosemont. Let's talk about that jobs issue, Gail Hartman.
Yes, I'd actually like to say a little bit more about that. It's such a small number that it's really kind of insignificant. You probably all noticed recently that there were 500 jobs with Roche Pharmaceutical.
Roche Pharmaceutical. Up in Oro Valley, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and there was no open pit mine involved there. And what's even more interesting, I think, is that Freeport, McMoRan, and ASARCO are now hiring for jobs in existing mines. Freeport, McMoRan just added 806 jobs since last year, which is about twice what Rosemont would be offering, and ASARCO added another 137. So mining jobs really are available right now, and it's a much better approach to use existing mines than destroying a mountain, you know, with a new mine. I also would like to just point out that for people that are statistically minded, that mining is less than a third of 1% of Arizona employment. So it really is a very insignificant amount. And The Star had an article a week or so ago talking about how local leaders are saying that we need to build, you know, higher-paying, science-based jobs, university research, astronomy, optics, solar, aerospace, pharmaceuticals, et cetera, that's the way the city, the people here think they would like to go, and the way the community believes we should go. And I would certainly agree with that.
I think this might be a good place to take our break. We will be back. There's more to talk about with Kathy Arnold, the Vice President of Environmental and Regulatory Affairs for Rosemont Copper, and Gail Hartman is here, President of the group Save the Scenic Santa Ritas. Got it right that time. Third time's a charm. And Dan Shear is with us from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Lots still to talk about Rosemont, including the water issue. We'll address that when we come back.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Our debate today is the proposed Rosemont Mine in the Santa Rita Mountains. Kathy Arnold is here. She is Vice President of Environmental and Regulatory Affairs for Rosemont Copper. And Gail Hartman, President of the group Save the Scenic Santa Ritas. And Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Dan, I'll let you begin. And I did say we would be talking about water. Do you have a water question?
Well, you know what? Not yet.
Then why don't I start with the water question, and then you'll pick up the next one. Gail Hartman, is water a big issue as far as you're concerned?
Yes, it certainly is. But I'm gonna defer back to one thing about impact first, which is if this mining complex were to be in Tucson, it would extend from I-10 on the west to Tucson Boulevard on the east and from Pima Street on the north to 22nd Street on the south. That's what would be covered by the pit and the waste piles and other impacts, just to give you a sense of the size. And the pit is about five times the height of a mountain. So,
okay.
So
now,
back to water.
Water. Is this a problem as far as you're concerned?
Well, all the models are showing that on the east side, where the mine will be, there will be profound effects, lowering of the aquifer, and you know, reversals of the direction of groundwater, you know, into the pit once the mining is finished. There'll be what they call, you know, a cone of depression around there, and it would be completely irreversible and, you know, would last forever. And two of the models even have impact extending into the Tucson Active Management Area, in effect, you know, diverting water from the Tucson Basin toward the cone of depression. And this is particularly concerning because, you know, Pima County taxpayers have consistently voted for the conservation of natural and cultural resources, and this could effectively dewater the Davidson Canyon area, Cieniga Creek. I mean, it's not 100% certain, but it's very likely. The hydrologists seem to feel that this will be really quite an issue on that side of the mountain.
So you're saying big impact as far as water?
Certainly on the east side, yes.
Okay, and Kathy Arnold, would you disagree with that?
Oh, yeah, disagree. We have done two separate models on the on the hydrology in the area. The water fluctuations on that side of, on the east side of the mountain, are naturally fluctuating up to 25 feet. Our impacts are 1 foot to 10 feet at the very most, and that is as you get closer and closer to the pit. Is there going to be a groundwater direction change? Definitely, and it's in the immediate vicinity of the pit, not in Davidson Canyon, not in Cieniga Creek. In fact, we're not seeing impacts out into Cieniga Creek out until 1,000 years or more, and those are speculative. We're not talking in the seven generations lifetime, which is the sustainable review period. We're talking speculative. Is there going to be another ice age kind of time frame? So that's that. I do want to address the jobs issue,
okay?
Because Gail threw out the jobs and minimizes the impact that employees in mining have. 1 in 8 jobs in Arizona depended on mining in 2006. That's huge.
Okay.
And so it's an easy thing to go poo-poo, there's no impact, and only a third of 1% of the people are miners. But there are a lot of industries and a lot of businesses in Arizona that center around mining. 65% of the nation's copper is produced here in Arizona. And so to minimize that is really not fair to the people who work hard to produce a product.
Kathy, can we go back to the water question real quickly? And I wanted you to take it down to a level that a lot of people down in Green Valley can understand a little bit better. That is the big concern down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, when I turn on the tap, I want water to come out. What
yes.
are you doing to guarantee that that's going to happen?
There are about 4 things that we're doing. One, with the people that might be impacted by our production pumping, we've already got in place well owners' agreements that we're fixing pumps, we're fixing pipelines, we're already replacing infrastructure for them. There's an American Home Guardian insurance policy that's there. We also are working with Community Water Company of Green Valley to ensure that they can get a CAP line to an area that will actually allow them to use their allocation. They've been maintaining their allocation for a long time without access to it. So we are working with them to make sure that happens. We're working with them to try and set up the recharge basins and find a spot for them, and we've helped pay for the science for that. We're actually going to, we've been purchasing CAP allocations. We've got over 45,000 acre feet of CAP allocations that we've already purchased and put into the ground. Now, we've had to put them in at Ever Valley because there wasn't space at Pima Mine Road. But once we get a recharge station close enough, we'll be able to work with the system and transfer the water down locally. We've also asked the local pecan orchards if we can work with them, and they've refused us 2 or 3 different times. So the idea is that we're trying to work with the communities to do what we need to do to ensure that there's water there. But the biggest thing that we're doing is helping the Community Water Company of Green Valley actually get their water and get it to an area where it will recharge the basin and make sure that there will always be water at the tap.
And FICO, which is the pecan orchards, has a recharge facility, and they are also going after that CAP water with a line. Why can a deal not be worked out?
That's a good question.
Okay, we've got about 4 minutes to go on our discussion on the Rosemont Mine. I think at this point I would like to have Gail Hartman and Kathy Arnold explain what's ahead now. We're about, 4 or 5 years into this process, mm-hmm. Kathy Arnold. What are your hurdles? What permits do you still need? And what are some of your goals as far as timeline?
The biggest timeline that we have right now, Dan, is our bill, I'm sorry,
That's okay.
is to actually a lot more nervous than I thought I was this morning, is to actually go ahead and work our way through the draft EIS process. That's a draft environmental impact statement process. And what that is this statement will be put out to the public and actually be able to be reviewed. There's a 90-day period when people will be able to look at it, say what they think, and compare all the alternatives that the Forest Service is looking at, including the mitigation opportunities that are there. Once that's done, then they'll move into the final EIS process, and they'll pick an alternative, they'll write the permits. All of that process on the federal side will happen. So it's been a lot of effort to get to this stage, but once we get here, it's a good process. Then we also have our aquifer protection permits from the state. That'll go out to the public for review. We'll have the Pima County Department of Environmental Quality air permit that'll go out for review. And there are a series of smaller permits that are going to be issued. Five or six issues, but they're all in line to come out in the next few months.
Okay, Gail Hartman, how do you see that timeline?
Well, I have to make one more comment about water, which, as Kathy pointed out, the water that they have, their CAP water, is being recharged in Marana. So water flows north around here. Thus, it's all flowing out of the Tucson Basin and isn't doing anybody in Green Valley any good. The other thing that we really have to remember is that the Colorado River is over-allocated and has been for some time. And the political reality is very complex in terms of getting any CAP water into Green Valley. I've heard people say at the very least it would be 10 to 15 years. So I think it's a little bit oversimplification to talk about Rosemont helping to supply water to the area when they will be, you know, using a great deal of groundwater themselves. As to the process, Kathy essentially said it correctly. The most important thing would be this draft EIS coming out this late summer or fall. It has been much slower than I think Rosemont anticipated because this is a complicated issue and there have just been lots of things that the Forest Service needed to look at. I don't think they were quite prepared for the complexity or for public concerns, the fact that a lot of elected officials are opposed to this mine. And that's made
a lot are for it.
Well,
sorry.
A few.
I can let that one go.
No, it's fine.
Pima County, Tucson, Patagonia, Sonoyta, the communities that are impacted, Green Valley, Sahuarita, are all unanimously opposed. So that has made it more difficult. There will be a 90-day review period, and we would encourage people who are listening to this to the draft will be available in libraries. Please take a look at it, find what you think is the biggest problem, and respond to the Forest Service, and we will be making an effort to help people do that.
Got about 1 minute to go. Dan, do you have a quick question?
Sure do. Gail, you just hit on it. What concrete role has public sentiment played in this whole battle?
Well, I think it's played an enormous role, and I'm actually very, very grateful for the elected officials who have opposed the mine and for the public's concern. Rosemont has tried very hard to generate support for the mine, but everywhere I go, just on the street, people say, oh, my goodness, you know, how can you stop this from happening? And I say, well, you know, we're trying, and we think it will not go through. It'll take a long time, but we're glad that you're opposed.
And a final word from Kathy Arnold.
Well, we found that we have over 12,000 people who have signed up to support us. All of the business community is in support. And public sentiment has helped us make our project better. So we look forward to all the public comments.
Kathy Arnold, Gail Hartman, Dan Scheer, thank you very much for talking about the proposed Rosemont copper mine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you listening?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Local talk at its best.
Up next, you won't believe what's going to happen.
This is Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Andy Rose. We're hearing two completely different stories on the federal budget talks today.
It has everything to do with women's health. That's the only issue that was left undone when we left the White House last night.
That's Harry Reid, but Republican John Boehner says it has nothing to do with it.
We're close to a resolution on the policy issues.
Without a deal, the government shuts down at midnight. The Libyan opposition is now out of Ajdabiya. The Gaddafi military launched a major attack to regain control. But CNN's Nick Robertson tells us that may not be the full story.
While there is on the battlefield a stalemate developing, there are hints of back-channel talk that hints at the possibility in the not-too-distant future of ceasefire.
The biggest protests yet since the fall of Hosni Mubarak are taking place in Egypt. Tens of thousands of people are calling for faster reform from the military government. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Honda has recently learned that our Really Big Thing sales event is causing some confusion. It seems a few people have gone to dealerships looking for the really big buttons from our TV commercials. Sorry, we don't have any big buttons, just really big deals on the full line of Hondas, including Odyssey, Pilot, and CR-V, and 0.9% APR financing for qualified buyers on a new Honda Accord or Civic. Hurry, the Really Big Thing is only here for a really short time.
See dealer for finance details. Ends May 2nd, 2011.
The Home Depot has made a special buy on Spectracide Weed Stop products. Buy one, get one free. Beautiful lawns don't just happen. Unfortunately, weeds do. That's why Weed Stop's different mixes kill over 250 kinds of weeds without harming your lawn. We're lowering the cost of winning the battle for your turf with Spectracide Weed Stop. Your choice, buy one, get one free. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Valid through April 10th, U.S. only. See store for details.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It's about 35 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show and buckmastershow.com. It's time for our Friday Radio Roundtable. Joining me on the Friday Roundtable, Mark Evans is here from TucsonCitizen.com. Jim Nintzel has dragged himself out of bed. And he's looking great, though. From the Tucson Weekly, and Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Sahrita Sun. And, of course, we're going to start with the governor signing the budget. I guess she actually signed it Wednesday, and then it was released to the media yesterday. But anyway, House Speaker Kirk Adams said that, he said that that lawmakers have balanced the state budget for fiscal 2012 without gimmicks, but today in the Arizona Republic, They say the bottom line is Adams is inaccurate when he says the budget contains no accounting tricks and gimmicks. The package contains fund transfers, forced payments, and rollovers. However, he is correct in saying the plan does not contain new borrowing. Let's begin with Mark Evans.
It's this budget pushes a lot of spending or responsibilities onto the counties. The counties are now going to have to account for it. They're still doing this rollover thing where they're holding money back that they're supposed to pay to the schools and to the universities. They were doing it where they would hold it back in June and then pay it in July. Now they're doing it every month. I was just at the Board of Regents meeting yesterday, and Dr. Hager, the president of NAU, was complaining that he has to hold back a lot of the money that he brings in from tuition to create a pot of money to handle the rollovers from the state, where the state's not paying them the money that they're due. And this budget still has a lot of that stuff in it.
And we have talked before about the state parks, how they're taking the gate fees away from the state parks, and the state parks at this point are trying to figure out how they're going to make payroll so that they can have the gate fees to hand over to the state. That's going to be a big struggle. But really, one of the biggest gimmicks in this budget is the fact that they said we're going to cut $500 million, nearly half of what the cuts that they made to balance the budget are in this health care proposal. And basically what they said was, we want to spend $500 million less in health care, and Governor Jan Brewer, you figure it out, and handed it over to her. And she's trying to figure out if she can do an enrollment freeze on access, and there's a real question as to whether that's going to pass a constitutional muster, because the voters placed those eligibility standards in place, and there's a lawsuit coming on that front. There's a question about whether the federal government will allow them to do all the co-pays that they want to set up, and fines for people who are smokers or overweight who are on the public health program. So, whether or not half of these cuts materialize really remains to be seen, and that's probably the biggest gimmick right in there.
Dan Scheer.
You know, the governor calls this budget the road to recovery, and I think what will be interesting is, come August or September, are we going to be in another deficit situation? And so I think time will tell, and they're certainly happy about it now. I know a lot of people who are not, but we'll see. They were in a very difficult situation, and at least they got the job done, but we'll see how it's going to hurt the state.
Well, And we're guaranteed to be in a deficit situation when the $1 billion that were close to a billion, less than a billion, but the sales tax money is going to go away. And they've set it up so that there will be recurring deficits in years to come when we start cutting another $500 million in taxes every year for corporations.
Plus, there are spending mandates that a lot of them are set by the voters that reset every July 1st. They will reset again July 1st in 2012, and there will be another deficit for next year if tax receipts remain as low as they have been. The only savior, really, for the state is we all miraculously get back to work and start spending lots of money and paying lots of sales taxes.
And since this budget's actually going to put a lot of people out of work, I think it's unlikely we're going to see that happen.
So this access thing, Jim Nensel, is still very fluid.
Yeah, the original plan was just to kick a lot of people off of healthcare, somewhere around $250,000 or a quarter million people off of healthcare, and they decided rather than do that, they'll hand over the responsibility to the governor, and the governor now has the responsibility of figuring out how to do that, and she's talking about freezing enrollment and reducing the numbers through attrition, because I think they feel that would be less politically damaging than just kicking 280,000 people off of healthcare overnight. And so we're going to see exactly whether or not even that will pass court muster, because Tim Hogan with the Center for Law and the Public Interest up in Phoenix has told me earlier this week, yeah, he's definitely waiting for his chance to sue as soon as he figures out how to go about that. And he can't figure out how to go about that till he sees the plan the governor comes up with.
Dan Scheer, how is this playing politically? We had Frank Antonori here on our Friday Focus a few weeks ago, and he says that the people in his district really like what he's doing. Jim, didn't you say that Mr. Antonori had introduced perhaps more bills than any other lawmaker this session?
He certainly had quite a few. 60s.
He said that.
He said that. I think he was the one who was posting. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, and Frank is telling us that in a year from now we're going to have a surplus. And so, of course, exactly the opposite of what you two are saying, which is not surprising to me. And like I said, it's a wait and see. The people down in Green Valley and Sahuarita pay close attention to this. And remember, we're a growing part of the state. And I think what's really going to hit us the hardest are the education cuts.
Yeah, you were at the tuition hearing, Mark Evans, yesterday, and is this the first? I can't remember a rebate that will be going to just about everybody. Well, I guess you call it a resident rebate.
Except for ASU.
ASU is not included. How is this going to work?
Well, the way it came about is the region president, Ann Mariucci, A-Board negotiated a deal with the governor on her original $170 million cuts to universities, and then which included some tuition increases and then some operation cuts to the universities, which were probably going to mean some program cuts and some job layoffs. And so they had the deal for the $170 million, and then the final budget that's passed is actually $198 million in cuts. So they had to come up with a way to account for those other $28 million. But they also are getting the expiration of stimulus dollars that they've had for the last 2 years, federal stimulus dollars that they've had for the last 2 years. And the Board of Regents a couple of years ago directed the universities to account for that. They called it the cliff, and to have some reserve funds. And NAU and U of A both have reserve funds. U of A has $28 million, and NAU has about $7 million. And what Regent Mariucci wanted was to try and lessen the amount of tuition increases at U of A and NAU by forcing them to use their reserve funds. And it was really convoluted. It took them all day yesterday to get through this single agenda item. There were amendments to amendments of motions. it took quite a long time. And what they ended up with was to give the university presidents everything they wanted, which was their tuition increases. So we have historic tuition now, $10,000 ASU and U of A year. But in order to deal with what Mariucci wanted, which was to force the universities to spend this reserve fund, they decided to give these rebates a one-time 1 year to zero out those reserve funds.
It's just going to be very, very difficult for a middle-class family to even be affording a university tuition, which is supposed to be nearly as free as possible. Now, that said, there are a lot of financial aid programs that are available to help ease some of this burden.
Bill, I was at a conference this week in Chicago, and I want to throw a couple of numbers at you. The U.S. labor pool is 155 million people. 25 million of them are unemployed. Yet there are 6 million jobs in this country that are open that are tech-related. And the reason they're open is because we can't fill them. We don't have people qualified enough. This is not the time to be cutting back on education funding.
And we continue to do it. And then our interview with Russell Pierce a few weeks ago, he still believes, Jim Nensel, that the universities are fat. And I think maybe the perception will be when they see now that they're giving the $750 rebate, oh, well, they've still got plenty of money.
Well, I'm sure that if the universities solely revolved around the Fiesta Bowl, Russell would have an entirely different opinion.
How is that playing? Do you have any updates on the Fiesta Bowl gate, I call it?
I think it's today. The NCAA is meeting with the Fiesta Bowl to determine their license, and that is critical for the future of the Fiesta Bowl. I don't think the Fiesta Bowl will ever go away because there's just so many bowls, but whether it remains part of the bowl championship series rotation is huge, and if that gets whatever the regulatory process is through the NCAA, defunded, taken away, whatever, and it goes to Texas, which is what a lot of people think will happen, to go over to Jerry Jones Palace in Dallas, then it just becomes a minor bowl again, and that would be a huge economic hit, not only to the Maricopa County and the Phoenix area, but to the state, because that bowl brings in a ton of business every year.
And so they'll spin it that Texas has fiestas too, right?
They've really killed the golden goose up there with this, if this happens.
Political blowback from this?
You know, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered, and they got kind of hoggy up there.
I mean, is Russell Pierce going to take any heat on this eventually, or is it
Well, here's what Russell was trying to do for the Fiesta Bowl. And the Fiesta Bowl was leasing the use of the stadium, the Cardinal Stadium, from something called the Arizona Sports and Tourism Authority, which is a tax-funded organization up in Phoenix that's funded through the rental car taxes and hotel room taxes, and they're actually kind of struggling. The Fiesta Bowl has all this money, but they were trying to work through some legislation that would allow them to basically have their fees capped, and it would violate the existing contract. And Russell was the sponsor of that bill, and it got held up in committee last year when people got wind of what that bill was actually going to do. But as a result of that, that started to shine some light on the Fiesta Bowl, and this whole thing unraveled, and that's why we are where we are now. Whether Russell ends up with any kind of blowback on this remains to be seen, but you know, we still don't know. Lots in flux in politics, particularly in Maricopa County, as we see people moving towards congressional runs and runs for whatever other offices they might be interested in. So we're going to see some big changes in that legislature.
He went on a trip, and the trip of taking the money from the trip from the Fiesta Bowl was not a violation of state law, but if he took tickets, that would be, and he claims that he paid the tickets back.
Okay, caller Bill to the Buckmaster Show has a question about tuition. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, it's not a question, it's a comment, but you know, my son graduates this year from Tucson High. He's ranked in the top 20 kids in his class of over 700, and before this tuition increase, being that high in his class, the U of A provided a $2,000 a year scholarship. So it's not just that the tuition went up, is that the financial aid packages for kids that ought to get merit money has gone down. It's gone down a lot. So this is before the $10,000 a year price tag. So it's going to hit, I think, lots and lots of people.
And one of the things that they tried to do yesterday through the university president's request for tuition increases was that they held the line on scholarship funding. So, and one of the things that the regents are the university presidents is really costing them a lot of money is the Ames Scholarship, which was a great deal. It was a wonderful program. If you maxed out your Ames scores and didn't get less than, I think, a B through your entire high school career, you could get the Regents Scholarship, which paid for your tuition. And that was so successful that it's really costing the universities a lot of money and putting a lot of pressure on financial aid. And that's where a lot of the increase to tuition is going to, is to the financial aid set-asides.
Thank you, Bill, for that comment. Jim, as you mentioned, it is going to certainly be a very difficult time for, I think, any of the undergraduate students. Meanwhile, the out-of-state tuition continues to go up, so I guess there are some people that want to come to Tucson regardless of the price.
And I guess it costs a little less than some other places if you're an out-of-state student. But and those out-of-state students are helpful for the university. There's no doubt about it.
Dan, I want to bring you in. We had the discussion about Rosemont Mine. Ultimately, what's your feeling on whether this thing is going to happen?
Well, you know, that's a dangerous question to ask an objective journalist. But I'll tell you that there's a process that needs to be played out, and we're watching it closely. And my gut feeling is that it probably will go through, and I know I'm going to get phone calls later today about that. There's a lot of opposition, and the question is, will the people who are for the most part opposed to this, I don't care what Rosemont says, will what they have to say really matter in the end?
Jim, Ron Asta went on TV, candidate for mayor, went on TV and asked folks to let him know about whether he should stay in the race. What's the reaction been?
Ron says that the reaction, that he got a lot more negatives than positives out of the whole thing. I'm sure that's a surprise.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and you know, he's still got to talk to his supporters in this whole thing, and he's trying to make up his mind about what to do. You know that he really does want to do it, but you know, whether or not it makes sense to do it isn't a whole other question, because obviously this, I don't think this issue is going to go away. I think it's going to haunt him throughout the campaign, and so, you know, it's whether or not he wants to deal with that between now and then remains to be seen.
Let's go to caller Joyce. Joyce, quickly, we've only got about a minute and a half. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, hi. Can your people please address the question of what happened to all the money for that was supposed to go for education from the Arizona lottery? I understand it's been diverted, and I'm very concerned about that. That's something wrong.
Thank you, Joyce.
You know, I don't know what they're doing with the LTAF funds.
You know, I know that the lottery dollars for things like the Heritage Fund have been borrowed against for the future and obligated, I think, all the way through 2035. I do not know what happened to the education end of that.
Quickly about guns on campus. We're talking about the universities. Apparently that will go to the governor, Mark Evans.
Yeah.
Considerably watered down than originally.
Yes, it passed both the House and the Senate yesterday, and now it goes to the governor, and she's presumably going to sign it.
We're talking. Do you have a Ron Asta comment, Mark Evans?
It's one of the strangest things that I've seen in local politics, where a guy runs an ad saying, you know, I had this accident where a woman died, and what, you know, should I continue to run for an office because of that? It was just bizarre to me.
We have an intern in our office who actually cut a very similar ad that you can watch on our blog, where she's asking whether she should stay in the mayor's race as well, because she's only 18, and she may or may not be eligible. And if you tell her to stay in, she's going to go for it.
All right. Jim Ninsel, Mark Evans, Dan Scheer, thank you very much. You all have a great weekend.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of 5 major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Cañada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson community. Our thrift shop donations and sales provide more than half of needed funding, which goes to programs like Operation School Bell. Since its inception, Operation School Bell has provided clothing and school supplies for more than 38,000 children. But we need your help. Donate an item or a financial gift. Shop our thrift store or volunteer. For more information on how you can make a difference, visit assistanceleaguetucson.org.
It is coming up on 56 minutes past the hour. That music always heralds our weekend watch. Guy, the host of the weekly radio show On the Menu Live, and that is Mr. Matt Russell. How you doing, Matt?
Oh, what a glorious Friday morning to you and your listeners. Bill, doing great today.
The spring fling is getting ready to kick off, and I think it might be already underway, right?
It is indeed. There's nothing else quite like it. The spring fling, Bill, the largest student-run carnival in the nation is happening through this weekend up at Rialto Downs on First and River. And what this does, Bill, as you know, it raises money for the University of Arizona campus clubs and other organizations. Great food, great games, rides, entertainment, a wonderful family outing for this weekend, and the admission is only $5. So this is one of my top picks for the weekend.
And there will be something to eat there.
Lots of things to eat. Again, just in case your doctor tells you that you're not getting enough Indian fry bread in your diet, this is the place to be.
Oh, I love that fry bread. Just soak it up in honey, and oh, that's so good.
I love it.
Sundays on the Strip. What the heck is that about?
Yeah, this is pretty cool, Bill. Ray Flores from Cerveza's Taco Garage and of the El Charro family of restaurants is beginning to inspire a revitalization of sorts of Speedway Boulevard, harkening back kind of to the days where Speedway was the place to be, where people like myself back in the 80s used to cruise up and down Speedway looking for great food and great fun. So what Ray's done is he's rallied together a growing number of merchants along Speedway, and he's created something called Sundays on the Strip. And beginning this Sunday, from about noon to long after the sun goes down, there's going to be a number of merchants offering great food and drink specials, great entertainment, all up and down Speedway. A couple that I want to highlight, Trident Grill, one of our favorite places, is going to be offering a $5 strip menu with items including their famous chicken wings. And I've tried time and time again to get Nelson Miller over at Trident Grill to disclose his secret ingredient for those great chicken wings. And he's not talking, Bill. After we have some wings at Trident, we'll be heading on over to Cerveza's Taco Garage for two-for-one Sonoran hot dog tacos and two-for-one Patron margaritas. And we thought we'd stop into May's Counter as well with some of their famous chicken and waffles. They're going to be doing a special on fried pickles as well. So this is a foodie dream going up and down Speedway Boulevard starting this Sunday and every Sunday moving on forward.
Sounds like you will not be hungry late Sunday evening.
That's what I plan on.
Walking tour of downtown Tucson. You kind of hit some of the highlights of downtown Tucson. And that's up coming on the Menu Live Thursday afternoons at 5 here on KJLL.
Absolutely. With all the buzz going downtown, with the new restaurants opening up seemingly every week, we thought we'd do a walking tour of downtown and go in and out of restaurants and clubs and bars and retail operations to get a sense of what the buzz is all about. We talk about parking, we talk about traffic, we talk about all the great destination experiences there are downtown. So beginning next Thursday, the 14th, that's part one of our two-part series of On the Menu Live Goes Downtown. Again, part one will be April 14th at 5 o'clock.
Thank you, Matt Russell. We'll see you next Friday. Have a great weekend. Do not eat too much now.
Oh, I can't make any promises, Bill. Take care.
Thanks a lot. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by our friends at Flower, Rieger, and Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers and Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of Team Buckmaster, we're all here right now. Our producer, the lovely and talented Rosemary Brandt, the lovely and talented marketing director Deborah Howard. I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend.
Listen to this.
You're tuned into Tucson's best choice for local talk.
I love it, huh? Little back and forth, witty repartee.
KJLL, South Tucson.